I felt like this was going to be very pertinent ASMR for our podcast, and it was going to be the source material.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's good book. That's some good book.
You hear
book.
All, what, 1,157 pages?
I was going to say, we have different editions, so I think mine's 1,153.
Yeah, mine's yeah. 1,150. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. 1,153. I was including the acknowledgments.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's always spooky.
Should we get into our scariest?
I feel like we should. We're going to have to bounce back to chapter one.
Yeah.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Do you want me to go first this time?
Yeah, because my scariest was tied with my favorite for chapter one.
Right,
so
right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my scariest honorable mention is when Henry attacks the group at the well house.
Yeah.
So when they're all like shimmying down into the hole, and I think it's Mike who's last, and Henry attacks him. And so the rest of the group down below can't help him. They're just hoping to God that like he doesn't die. And when Mike is able to get the gun away from him and kick him down into the well, and then you presume that Henry dies in that moment, but he definitely doesn't. So I had that one in as my honorable mention. I also had when Stan got attacked in the tunnels is one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
Because holy shit, is that like such a sad scene, especially when they finally find him, they get rid of Pennywise, and he wakes up and he just starts like freaking out. And he's like, you left me. You're not my friends. You don't care about me. And they're all just also crying. Just like, no, Stan, we promise we didn't leave you. And I guess in real life, when they shot that scene, they all like fucking lost it. Like that was one of the hardest scenes to film for all of the kids, because they truly like felt bad in that moment.
Oh.
So that was definitely in there. I honestly had Georgie's death as my honorable mention for scariest scene, because it's a fantastic fucking scene. But to me, it wasn't like super scary because I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
For me, honestly, my scariest scene is Bev's bathroom scene.
Yeah.
And mostly because like it happens fairly similar in the miniseries in the book, where like blood just sprays all over the bathroom and she's there to witness it. But in the movie, like I really like the way that they played it, the way that she like goes and gets the tape measure and puts it down the drain, realizing that it's one way deeper than she thought it was. And when she goes to pull it back out, she gets a mixture of blood and hair on the bottom of it. And it grabs her like Evil Dead grabs onto her hands and then onto her head, and it starts to pull her down towards the drain. And like that moment right is the part to me that like terrified me the most. I was like, holy fucking shit.
And it was fairly similar to the book.
Yeah.
Because in the book, whatever is in the drains end up grabbing the tape measure and like it runs essentially.
Super. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think rather than the blood just outwardly spewing out, there's like a bubble that comes up and then pops
and
it's like, and
it gets
everywhere.
Blood everywhere. Yeah. I really liked the in the movie when they just had it like a geyser of blood. I felt like so proud of Sophia Lillis in that moment, who played young Beverly, because holy shit, trying to film that was probably so difficult.
Also, just as a general comment, Sophia Lillis is a bad bitch.
I fucking love
her.
She
did so good.
She was awesome.
So good.
She's a fantastic actress. I mean, she was in the new Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. She's really good. She plays a druid.
Also, I feel like, and this might be a stretch, but I feel like there's a couple of callbacks to other Stephen King works throughout it. Like things that have been turned into movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that the way that the blood scene played out was reminiscent of the elevator scene from The Shining. And even Nick called that out, where he was like, his movies really like an absurd amount of blood, don't they?
Well, it's certainly got plenty of that.
And oh, like, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And definitely in like the second scene, in the second movie, when Beverly's locked in the bathroom stall.
Yep.
Definitely indicative of The Shining.
That was a Shining thing for sure.
And same with like Stanley's head, like turning into like the thing monster. Like, you know, there's a lot of homages to like different horror movies.
Yeah. Oh, chapter two.
Chapter two.
Yeah. My scariest from chapter two, that was actually a perfect segue, was Spider Stan.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I was really sad that I didn't get the Stan's head Jack in the Box scene.
Yeah.
But what they did with Stan's head in this one was really good. No. So in the book, there is also a scene where there is a head in the refrigerator and they open it and it's just blood that's like dripping from it and getting all over the place.
Yep.
And that was well done. It was, the imagery was really well written and it came across and it was eerie and gross. Mm-hmm. But in the movie, Stan's head gets legs.
Yeah.
And starts crawling in. I don't even like to think about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was super gross. Yeah.
Legs coming out of eyes. Like, ugh.
Oh, nope. And I loved like the way that, yeah, at first, like, Stan was like, you guys left me. Like, what happened? You know, and he's kind of like taunting them. And then he goes, I don't feel so good. Like, what's wrong with me? And the legs just start like, yeah, like you said, coming out of his face. And then he gets up and he just like, he goes from being somewhat Stan to just like being a monster. To just being like, just like going, running after them. Yeah, that was a pretty good monster. I got to say, out of all of the chapter two monsters, the Stanley head is actually like a pretty legit one that I like actually had some creep factor to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was hard to choose with these movies because in my opinion, they weren't necessarily scary. There was a lot of camp that was in it. And
yes.
I love that. Yeah. Like I love campy horror. That's great.
That's fine. Yeah.
There were only a couple of scenes that were really just like, that's a lot. And that was one of those scenes that was a lot.
It brought out that arachnophobia for you, I'm sure.
Yeah. What about your scariest scene?
Okay, so for me, I have two honorable mentions for scariest scene. My first one is when Henry attacks Eddie in his hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
And he just attacks him through the cheek. He just sticks a knife just straight through his cheek. And I really liked how Eddie, his reaction, you know, because Henry just starts laughing at him and then they're both laughing. And then Eddie just like gets into the shower and like closes the shower curtain. And then Henry like switches to like, okay, I'm coming in there. I'm going to kill you. And then Eddie just like stabbed him through the shower curtain, just like in the middle of the chest.
Yeah.
Not fatally, but I still gave him props because like, I don't know what the fuck I'd do in that situation. Holy shit. Yeah. Would that just be terrifying?
Yeah. That is also a really cool scene in the book.
Yeah.
When Henry's in the townhouse or whatever it is that they call it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Attacking them. Yeah. I like that they still brought him back. I liked most of the scenes with adult Henry, like in the insane asylum and stuff. Like I liked all of those scenes. I put Vicky's death in here as an honorable mention.
Yeah.
Cause I really like that to just kind of break up this main story. Right. Cause like, this is just during another 27 year cycle for Pennywise. So he's just going around, he's doing his same old Pennywise shit. And so I kind of like that they have and I also like that this death has nothing to do with the Losers Club. Right? Like when the little boy dies at the carnival, Pennywise uses that boy's death to like get to Bill a little bit to try and like mirror Georgie's whole situation.
Yeah.
But Vicky is completely separate. She's just she's like an appetizer for Pennywise.
Yeah.
And I really liked that scene.
It reminds you that while the Losers Club, from their perspective, it is them versus it. It is still focused on killing whatever it wants to kill.
Yeah. It's just there to eat. Like it's just before
hungry.
It goes back to into hibernation. Like it's got to.
It's been 27 years and the dinner bell is ringing.
Exactly. Yeah. And according to like Mike, like this is this has just started happening. So like, I think he was saying there was two or three deaths in the last like week.
Yeah.
Right. That were all from like these accidental disappearances or murders that had happened. And just to set the scene for you, because I'll do it very briefly since it's an honorable mention. It's when there's a little girl who's at like a baseball game or something and she has a big birthmark on her face. And when she goes down under the bleachers just to hang out, Pennywise initially just tries to like engage with her, and she has a little bit more wherewithal than like Georgie had to be like, you're not my friend, you're scary, and I'm gonna stay away from you. And he immediately turns that on her and starts crying and sounding like he's wounded. And so she in turn empathizes and tries to ask, why are you crying? And he turns her vulnerability against her.
Bitch.
By being like, people hate the way I look and they always say I'm scary and And it makes her think people make fun of him for being different. People make fun of me for being different, too.
He's a fucking master manipulator.
Yeah. Yeah. And he slowly brings her in by just like convincing her that he can make her birthmark go away by just blowing it away in the wind. And I like how he kind of sets it up by like making them count. 1, 2. And then she just says, you forgot to say. And then he just eats her. And then,
Love it.
So honorable mention. And then finally, my scariest scene in chapter 2 is like Adrian's death.
Oh my God.
Adrian's death in the fucking, in both the book and the movie were both done very well in the sense that they're absolutely tragic and terrifying. And the reason why they're tragic and terrifying is because they're incredibly realistic up until you have the thousands of red balloons and Pennywise eating Adrian on the bank.
Yeah. Yeah. If you were to just subtract the very end of that, it is a scene that not only can happen in real life, but does happen in real life.
Has
very
happened.
Regularly.
Has happened, does happen, will probably continue to happen, especially in this new administration that we're in, which just absolutely boils my blood. So yeah, that's definitely my scariest. But I think my favorite part of that scene and the part that like really gets to me is when Dawn tries to save Adrian at the base of the river, and just all of the balloons start flying out.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's like a million fucking red balloons, just like he obscuring his vision. So many balloons are like, there's no way they could fucking possibly be there. Yeah. And I just like how right after they all kind of dissipate, like Dawn looks over and like Pennywise and Adrian are gone.
Yeah. Oh man. And so I already reading the book and starting watching the movie, because they actually filmed the movie in Bangor too, reading the book and then especially getting into the beginning of part one, did you feel like you were watching Drain? Because to me, Derry is Drain.
Oh yeah, well it's supposed to be like the quintessential like small town.
Yeah,
right. So and like of course we would like we would bring Drain into that equation.
And when you think about like in the move or in the book, there's a lot more context to some racial issues and racism that's charged at Mike.
Oh, absolutely.
And then there's also there's the gay scene and him being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of just very common small town things. And I think that we probably connect with this on another level because we've lived that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean,
because not a lot of people are from a town as small as us,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree. I see the parallels there. And, like, I don't even want to describe the scene because it's just sad. And it's one of those things that, like, it's one thing to watch something that's, like, dramatized on television and then to just think about, like, even a fraction of that actually happening.
Yeah.
And knowing that, like, it does happen. I've seen it happen before. I've had it happen to me before. So, you know, like, it happens in way worse scales to other people.
Yeah.
And so that's what made it super scary to me. I'm glad that they included it because it is one of those scenes that, like, even if it is hard to watch, it's integral to the book.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, too, that, like, the book was written for, like, the 50s, like, the late 50s. So, like, there was definitely more racism and bigotry back then, but it's interesting to see how like those two things haven't really changed that much in the grand scheme of things. Yes, we do have a lot more regulations and a lot more equality now, but at the same time, a lot of it feels kind of surface level.
Yeah.
And that even if we do have a lot more equality, it almost feels like there's a lot of people that are kind of angry about that and upset about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also makes me curious because, you know, we're in the Portland area. So it makes me curious if we feel like things have gotten marginally better because we live in such a progressive spot.
Absolutely.
It's like if we were to go to say like fucking Kansas or some shit like that.
Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee. Some yeah, Texas. Anywhere in the South or even in the Midwest or anything like that.
Florida.
Like,
yeah.
Would we feel like it's really gotten that much better?
I mean, truly, that's why I felt the way I felt about the election.
Yeah.
Right? Was because when you live in a state that is progressive and you look around you and you're like, no, we live in a civilized society. We live in a society that believes in equality and believes in, I can go, the list goes on.
Yeah.
You believe all of these things. But then when you see the election results and you're like, wait a second, there's a much larger portion of the population that believes the opposite of what I believe.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that like, we can't believe different things, because like I truly believe in that right to like believe whatever you want as long as you're not enforcing or forcing it on other people.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see like there seems to be so much hate on the other side, yeah. Where it's just when you look around, like truly, I mean, I don't see a lot of that progressiveness that like I thought I saw.
Yeah.
A year ago.
Agreed.
Just by looking around me, if I were to take that bubble and move it out a little bit, I don't think it would be as progressive as I would want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I very much agree. Mm-hmm. And when I was diving a little deeper into like what life is like in Maine and places like that, I did find myself trying to look at, you know, where do spaces exist that are rural and progressive? And
yeah.
Those do exist. It's very few and far between, but it is in northern New England. Like,
oh,
a lot of rural spaces in Maine are more progressive because Maine is pretty progressive.
Yeah.
And apparently Vermont is like barely any big cities, but it's very blue.
Interesting.
And so, you know, we're not from there. We're from an area where, yeah, our bubble seems pretty blue, but once you get into rural Oregon, it is bad.
It is red.
Bad.
It's fucking red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
oh yeah, my God.
I'm glad that you brought that one up because you know, it hits close to home for me.
Absolutely.
I mean for all of us. Mm-hmm. Like we all, if we are not a part of that community, we know a lot of people in that community. And we can think about what it would be like to see that.
Absolutely. You know? Oh my God. No, yeah. Absolutely. Like I have experienced bigotry in my life.
Yeah.
I had my first girlfriend in high school. I used to get shoved into lockers and hazed. And like, I remember thinking to myself when that shit was happening that like, this ain't even that bad.
Yeah.
Like this could be so much worse than it is right now. Like these people are just doing this because they're bored and they don't really have another avenue. Right.
Well, and I admit that I even acted on homophobia as a kid and as a teenager, as a protective mechanism for myself,
mm-hmm.
where it was like, what's the one way that I can make people think that I'm not gay?
Yeah.
Oh, I just have to be homophobic.
That, absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
To insulate yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Though I totally get it. Had to take a little mini hiatus.
Oh yeah. I'm going to read a couple short passages.
Do it.
From the book. Just that I thought were really some of the more poignant pieces.
Mm hmm.
Out of these 1,153 pages, this section right here is from the perspective of Eddie. And for a little bit of background, they show it a bit in the movies and they dive a little deeper in the book about mm-hmm. the relationship between Eddie and his mom. And one of the parallels that Nick drew that I actually really appreciate was that in a way, Eddie is kind of being like Gypsy Rosed by his mom.
Oh yeah, Munchausen's by proxy.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And so this passage says, these were his friends and his mother was wrong. They weren't bad friends. Maybe, he thought, there aren't any such things as good friends or bad friends. Maybe there are just friends, people who stand by you when you're hurt and who help you feel not so lonely. Maybe they're always worth being scared for and hoping for and living for. Maybe worth dying for too, if that's what has to be. No good friends, no bad friends, only people you want, need to be with, people who build their houses in your heart.
I love that passage.
Yeah. Okay. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum here. So this next part, I thought was one of the most hilarious things that I've read at the pinnacle of tension in the book too, because this is in the middle of the Ritual of Chud when Bill is in the macroverse with it. And I'll start a little bit before where I highlighted just to kind of set the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But it says they stopped understanding that the Ritual of Chud, whatever that was, had begun. And then the title for the section is Bill in the Void.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you and why do you come to me? I'm Bill Denbrough. You know who I am and why I'm here. You killed my brother and I'm here to kill you. You picked the wrong kid, bitch. I am eternal. I am the eater of worlds. Yeah, that so? Well, you've had your last meal, sister. You have no power. Here is the power. Feel the power, brat, and then speak again of how you come to kill the eternal. You think you see me? You see only what your mind will allow. Would you see me? Come then. Come, brat. Come. I just love that in the apex of all of the tension, all of the fear, all of the evil that they're witnessing, Bill still has this just kick-ass attitude behind him where he's just like, no, well, you've had your last meal, sister.
Exactly. Well, guess what? You met your maker today.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think this is in the smoke hole, right?
It's before he sees Maturin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when they're just entering into the macroverse.
Got it.
Yeah.
Trying to enter into that, like, battle of wills.
Yeah. Yeah, such a cool spot.
It's such a good book. It's just such a good fucking book.
I was a teary-eyed mess when I read the part about friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many of those parts, though, where you're just like, that's what this fucking book is about. It's about friendship.
It is.
It's about, like, not only camaraderie, but, like, about these people that are not perfect, but they live inside of you. And they're people that, like, you would live and die for.
Yep.
Whether good or bad.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, if we're getting down to brass tacks, trivia for these two movies is vast and long.
Oh, yes.
Kind of like The Shining.
Yes.
I am, for time's sake, I'm not going to read all of these. Again, if you want to read them all, imdb.com. Great trivia section. But I am going to just quickly kind of, like, throw some out there. Sophia Lillis says that she had to stand on a box in some scenes because at only 5 feet tall, she is the shortest of the cast.
That's so funny too, because she seems like she towers over them.
Yeah.
And it could just be, like, also the standing on the box. It could just be her personality seems so big.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The teeth prosthetics that Bill Skarsgård wore as Pennywise made him drool profusely. Director Andy Muschietti liked this as the drooling adds onto the ravenous nature of Pennywise.
Yeah.
I told you this one earlier, but I have to say it again. Pennywise has only 4 minutes of dialogue in the entire film.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jackson Robert Scott, who plays Georgie, is the youngest in the movie and stated that he wasn't as scared of Pennywise as he thought he would be. He said he actually had a fun time doing his scenes and that Bill Skarsgård was always joking around. Just kind of adorable.
I love that.
I just love that so much. Some of the lines of dialogue were improvised by the actor. Much of Richie and Eddie's banter was improv.
Hell yeah.
Which I think is just hilarious.
That is hilarious.
Both, like, Jack and Finn are just very, like, witty on their own. I think in here, I don't remember which trivia point it is, but I think the director was saying that Finn Wolfhard is very close personality-wise to Richie Tozier.
That sounds right.
He seems like he's kind of like the funny guy.
The amount of just, like, your mom jokes that are thrown out there that are just so fucking funny.
Oh my God. So fucking good. Do you think Betty Ripson will ever come home? She's just like, decayed, like bogged full of water, probably smelling like Eddie's mom's underwear. So gross.
Her slippers smell like potpourri.
What are these, Eddie? Your birth control pills? Yeah, I'm saving you for your sister. God damn it.
The funny thing too is, like, when we were watching chapter one, pretty much any banter between Richie and Eddie, I was dying laughing, and Nick didn't really see it as that funny.
Sure.
But I'm like, when you know the characters in the book, you're like, they are killing this
They're
part.
Killing it.
Yeah.
And I appreciated it too that like I felt like they let the kids, just like the child actors in this film, really like play with their dialogue and also have the freedom to like curse.
Yeah.
To talk like little kids would talk.
Yeah.
Right? Because like that's how little kids like, because in reality, these kids are supposed to be like 11, 12.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be very young.
Yeah.
Like not quite high school, adolescent, like teenage age. Because
yeah.
Henry Bowers is like an adolescent teenager.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say the Losers Club was intended to be like fifth or sixth grade age.
Yeah. And I want to say that Henry, if I'm recalling correctly, Henry's been held back twice, mm-hmm. either once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a little bit older than they are. And I think his friend Patrick even has a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah. The kids are supposed to be younger than him. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think they're like 11, 12.
Mm-hmm. Bill Skarsgård wanted to make sure that his performance as Pennywise was convincing for audiences. He states, in order for this movie to be as effective as the book and the series, I have to scare a whole generation. My take was that Pennywise functions very simply. Nothing much is going on in terms of what he's thinking. He's animalistic and instinctive, which I appreciate. I do think that Bill played Pennywise very well.
I think he did too.
I do think that, especially in chapter two, some of the like transformations that Pennywise went through were just, they didn't hit right.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just because I'm an adult. Like I tried to see it from this perspective of like, if I was actually being chased by like a 15-foot witch, I'd probably freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
Right? Depending on whether or not it looked silly.
Yeah.
But
one thing that I've started to hone in on since we've been doing this podcast is, and I used to be this kind of person as well, I think I hear people frequently act as if they have to take a side. They have to like, oh, I have to like the book, or I have to like the movie, or I have to like the original or the miniseries, or I have to like the new ones. I can't like all of them.
Yeah.
And I recognized when we were recording The Shining that I had fallen into that camp of like, oh, I love the book, so I can't like the movie.
Yeah.
And as I watched it again and was reading it again prior to us recording, I was like, no, actually, these are two separate art pieces,
mm-hmm.
and I can appreciate both of them for what they are.
Absolutely.
And I feel like a lot of the time I hear people say like, well, Tim Curry did Pennywise better, so I can't say that I like the new movies. And I'm like, you can though.
Yes.
Like, you can appreciate that Tim Curry made an iconic Pennywise. You can also appreciate that Bill Skarsgård did a killer job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Like you were saying, it doesn't matter which iteration you like best. You can still find things to appreciate about every single adaptation.
Yeah.
And I personally like any amount of time that I get in Derry or in these books, whether it's, you know, the bits of the book that I want to be in there or not, I'm happy with.
I love
just more opportunity.
I love that you worded it that way, because whenever I would be done doing whatever responsible human thing I needed to do for the day and was going to go read,
uh-huh.
I would tell Nick, I'm going to go to Derry.
Oh. I'll be back.
Yeah.
Go to Derry.
And when I was at work, I would be like sitting there reading, and then a customer would come up and it would like take me a second to kind of dial back into work.
Right.
And they would be like, oh, what are you reading? And I'd be like, oh, I'm just, my brain's in Derry.
Let me see. After seeing the film for the first time, Stephen King, the author of the novel on which the film is based, had stated, I wasn't prepared for how good it really is.
Yeah.
This is strictly for the first movie though.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to look through and see if there's anything else here. Shipped to cinemas under the code name Pound Foolish, an opposite to Pennywise.
Yep. Pound Foolish.
Pound Foolish.
Gonna be my new gamer tag.
Dude, around the time of the theatrical release of this film in Lillitz, Pennsylvania, there was a prank that involved a series of red balloons tied to sewer grates throughout the town, mimicking one of the book's covers of the It novel. The prank had frightened the citizens, including the Lillitz police force.
Damn.
Director Annie Muschietti kept Bill Skarsgård separate from the child actors up until they had to shoot scenes together. On the day of their first scenes, the production staff warned the kids about how scary Skarsgård could be while in character. The kids brushed this off, claiming that they knew he was just an actor in a costume. They were professionals. They would be fine. However, when the time came for Skarsgård to be Pennywise for the scene, the kids were genuinely terrified.
Nice.
I love that so much. I think I had watched a lot of behind the scenes for the first movie because I really, really liked it. And it seemed like all of the kid cast really had a fun time filming it. And even more so, like, the teenage cast, Henry, Victor, Chris, Belch Huggins, Patrick, that kind of older cast of characters were super, like, brotherly and friendly to the core Losers cast, like, behind the scenes. And whenever they filmed these scenes together, they would always, like, kind of feel bad that they were having to beat up on these kids that they really liked and they, you know, thought were super cool. They were very protective of them. They, you know, they were, like, always being like, no, we're just messing around. You know that, right? Oh, and this is, I'm so excited to bring this up because I fucking love Stranger Things, but the Duffer Brothers originally wanted to direct this movie, the first It, but they were overlooked because they weren't established enough. They didn't have enough street cred.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And so Warner Brothers, they were like, we're not giving you It, bro. Get out of here. Go make a couple of movies and then come back and see if we'll give you something. So they went on to create Stranger Things, which co-stars Finn Wolfhard and pays homage to Stephen King. They also worked with Alexander Skarsgård, brother of Bill, and on their debut film, Hidden, in 2015.
And that turned out to be one of the most popular television shows of our generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, and I know you've only seen season one of Stranger Things, we'll watch the rest of it, it's very similar. It's about a core group of children who have to fight a supernatural evil.
Oh, okay.
Using the power of friendship. Like, it's literally super similar. It's more, like, the first three seasons are more sci-fi, and season four and five are more horror.
That, coupled with the fact that Winona Ryder's in it, I'm sold.
Sold.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
We will watch it. I'm so glad that they were told, the Duffer Brothers were told, get fucked, kid. Go do something else. Because, like, Stranger Things is so, so good.
Yeah.
Very, very close in favoritism to It. Just in terms of, like, storylines, character development. This like, overarching lore where It is from, like, a macroverse and another dimension and is some eldritch horror. Stranger Things is a little bit more grounded in reality, even though it's very much still sci-fi and horror.
Okay. Yeah, I need to give it another shot for sure.
I know it's a lot. It's a lot of content, but
it's also
you could read the footnotes for a lot of it and then decide if you wanted to actually watch it.
And also, I'll watch anything with Winona Ryder in it. Like, yeah. My favorite movie ever is, or top three favorite movies ever, is Girl Interrupted, and that's Winona Ryder and Angelina Jolie.
Absolutely.
Brittany Murphy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, perfect. Well, we'll cover it at some point. We definitely, definitely will. I'll see if there's anything else I wanted to mention in here.
When I was looking through trivia, this one was probably mentioned in chapter two, but I remember reading something that said that Bill Skarsgård had more fun while filming the second movie, but it was just because he could actually build camaraderie with the other actors.
Yes.
Where he felt like with the kids, he was just like, I don't really have much in common with them because they're all so much younger than me. So he was kind of just on his own for the majority of it. Well, and
they purposely kept him away from the child cast too, so that it would be scarier.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I definitely agree with you where he was just like, oh my God, I can actually be an actor and like hang out with other people on set. So that's all the trivia I'm going to do for It, Chapter 1. It, Chapter 2, I was going to bring up this trivia. Bill Hader was unaware that Bill Skarsgård can actually move his eyes in two different directions. Hader one day asked Skarsgård what kind of editing was done to achieve this effect in the first movie. Skarsgård, in full costume and makeup, responded by saying, oh, you mean this? And showed him how he can do it naturally, startling Hader. And they actually have a picture of him doing it. like a nice. Picture of like Hader being like, oh, like how do they do the special effects? Like, how do you do that? And Bill just like turns around and goes, what, you mean this? And he does it. And Bill's just like, ah!
It was so fun to see Bill Hader as Richie, because when I picture Bill Hader, I picture Stefan.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. Do you picture Richie Tozier now?
A little bit. Yeah. It's kind of a mesh of the two of them.
Right.
Yeah. New York's hottest club. Kevin.
Ooh, this one's actually pretty funny. So in the novel, Eddie ponders that he may have married Myra because she reminded him of his mother. In the film adaptation, the same actress, Molly Atkinson, portrays both Myra Kasprak as well as Sonia Kasprak.
Nice. That's a through line for all of them that ended up in relationships too, because Audra, Bill's wife, is supposed to be almost identical to Bev.
Uh-huh.
Bev's spouse, Tom, is, they assume that she married Henry, but it's really she married her dad.
Oh, she married her dad.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then Eddie married his mom.
Yeah.
And Richie didn't get married because he's gay.
Yeah, because he's secretly gay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bill Hader was approached for the role of Richie Tozier based on Finn Wolfhard's wish to cast him in the sequel. Hader, who had never met Wolfhard, was extremely flattered that Wolfhard wanted him to take on the role. In Henry Bower's room in the psychiatric hospital, there are several pictures of the moon above Henry's bed. In the novel, Pennywise's face appears in the moon and communicates with Henry. Which is true. They tried to portray that in the miniseries. Bill Skarsgård stated in an interview that even after filming had wrapped, he would have nightmares of Pennywise. In these nightmares, he would have to battle Pennywise just as the characters did in the film.
Nice.
This is one that you brought up earlier. Isaiah Mustafa went through Stephen King's novel 8 times before filming so he could fully understand the character, Mike Hanlon. Bill Hader, on the other hand, had read the book as a child and refused to reread it, claiming that it was way too long.
I thought when I initially approached it, I was concerned with how long it was because I read a lot,
but
I don't normally approach books that are that thick. And it flew by though.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah. Like I can understand it probably would take people a long time, but it is worth it to read it all.
Yeah.
In my opinion, even when it gets really dark and really hard to read, it's definitely still worth it. It tells a cohesive story. It just takes a while because it's telling a long story.
Yeah, it's telling the history of a town. It's telling the history of a cosmic horror and the other entities that are entwined in that.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot to go through.
Oh, yeah. Pennywise only has 7 minutes of dialogue in this film.
Nice. So altogether, he has 11 minutes.
11 minutes. Aw. The members of the Losers Club from 2017 were asked who they wanted to play their adult parts. Finn said Bill Hader. Sophia Lillis said Jessica Chastain. Chosen Jacobs said Chazik Boseman. Jack Dylan Grazer said Jake Gyllenhaal. Wyatt Olef said Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Jeremy Ray Taylor said Chris Pratt. And Jaden Martell said Christian Bale.
Nice.
Bale turned down the Bill Denbrough role outright while Boseman was unavailable due to his Marvel contractual obligations as Black Panther. Wolfhard and Lillis' choices were the only two that ended up being cast. James McAvoy was recommended by Chastain in returning the favor of her being recommended by him to Simon Kinberg for the antagonistic role of Vuk in their previous collaboration of X-Men Dark Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think James McAvoy did a really good job.
I think so, too.
I wonder why Chris Pratt and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Jake Gyllenhaal said no.
Yeah.
But who gives a shit?
Yeah, and I could actually see Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing a really good job.
Oh, being Stan?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and he wouldn't have had to be there for that long.
No. Yeah, all you got to do is show up, kill yourself, and then he can leave.
Do the little, like, writing the letters at the end.
Yeah.
One of Richie Tozier's character traits is his ability to do voices and impressions. Bill Hader, who portrays adult Richie, is a well-known impressionist, famous for the celebrity impressions he did for years on Saturday Night Live. With this in mind, screenwriter Gary Dauberman wrote a scene in which Richie does an impression of Al Pacino, a voice that Hader is quite good at. However, Hader requested the impression be removed from the script because the Pacino impression was old material and he didn't feel like doing it again.
I don't want to.
Andy Bean, who plays adult Stanley Uris, is Bill Skarsgård's close friend and was his guest at the premiere of It 2017, where Bean met director Andy Muschietti for the first time. So that might be why he got cast for Stan.
Yeah.
Because he's one of Bill's really good friends. That's pretty cool, actually. Oh, okay, what? Xavier Dolan met director Andy Muschietti randomly and expressed interest about being in this film, having loved the first one. Dolan said, "I'll do anything you want. I'll be the door handle, the doorknob, the curtain, whatever I can do in this film." He was later cast as Adrian Mellon.
Oh.
That's so cool. And like, that's a big fucking role. Yeah. Like, that's so cool. It honestly reminded me of like, even though fuck J.K. Rowling, but like how Luna Lovegood.
Oh, yeah.
Character, right, of the actress was like going through a really hard time and she had gone to like a book signing event.
Yeah.
She was like having an eating disorder or something like that. And she met J.K. Rowling and she was cast in the film.
After yeah. That yeah. Odd little snippet of random. J.K. Rowling actually having a soul.
I know.
Yeah.
If there ever was one. In an interview with Complex, James Ransone stated that he has a lot of tattoos, which was the reason why his character, adult Eddie Kasprak, wore a jacket throughout the film. Ransone wasn't willing to sit in the makeup chair every day to get the tattoos covered.
I don't blame him. I'd rather just wear a jacket, too.
Jesus Christ. That's crazy. You're going to love this. I'm sure you noticed this. At an hour 23 minutes, the faded pattern underneath Dean's skateboard is the same design as the carpet of the Overlook Hotel in The Shining.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
That's so cool.
Also, while we're tying in The Shining, if please, people, read the fucking book. But when you read the book, there is a character that crosses over between The Shining and It. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens to be the coolest character to tie between the two of them, too. It's Dick Halloran.
It's Dick Halloran. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. I just like how they just like shadow dropped him in there.
Yeah.
There's just no lead up or build up or anything. It's just the young losers attended the It experience in Hollywood as a group and were able to remain unnoticed by most of the fans in attendance. Damn.
Showing up to your own premiere.
Right. James McAvoy injured himself for real during his character fight scenes with Pennywise, suffering a double thigh strain. At one point, McAvoy shared a picture on his Instagram page of bags of ice on his thighs. Ow. Ow. That sounds awful. Oh, no. Filming the Adrian Mellon sequence took place during salmon season, and 6 tons of dead fish had to be removed from the canal due to this stench.
Oh, that's fun.
Okay, finally, Pennywise's costume in the film and its predecessor is much more faithful to the description in the novel in comparison to the Tim Curry costume in the miniseries It in 1990. Including his orange hair and the orange pom-poms down his silver suit. The miniseries only included the orange pom-poms.
Okay.
I'm just going to end it there. There's so many fucking... Yeah, let's just... All right, let's get into our ratings.
Yeah.
Fuck, I didn't pick a murder weapon.
It's okay. I didn't either, so I just came up with one on the fly.
Do it. Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, so my murder weapon is the power of friendship.
I think mine's going to be a slingshot.
Oh, hell yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Absolutely.
Because the fucking slingshot with the silver dollar.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. So for quality,
Oh, yeah. And you're doing the... I did for both chapter one and chapter two. I did separate ratings.
Separate ratings?
Yeah. I mean, okay. It's up to you. But like that's...
I'll do separate. Yeah. For quality for chapter one, I'll rate that one pretty high. I'd say it's like a 4 out of 5, somewhere around there.
Right.
I'll save this critique for the second one. but I feel like for the most part, they stayed true enough to the story that it was doing it justice. Mm-hmm. The kids did an incredible job. I feel like it gave the right vibe. It portrayed Derry in the way that I was picturing it in my head.
Yeah.
I feel like it did really good. For scariness, I'd say it's like, if I were to have watched it in a theater, it probably would have scared me a little bit more. But I'd say it's like a 2.5, like somewhere around there. It's not scary.
Yeah.
But there are some unsettling parts, and there are some parts that, like, the tension's high enough that it at least kind of gets your heart going.
Sure.
And then for rewatchability, I'd say like a 3 out of 5. I probably won't watch it again anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't shy away from watching it.
Yeah.
For chapter 2, quality, I'm going to say is like a 2 out of 5. For some reason, I don't know what changed between chapter 1 and 2, or if maybe there's just more CGI in chapter 2 than there was in chapter 1. But to me, the quality of the CGI in chapter 2, knowing that it was released in 2019, is unacceptable.
It is.
In a world where Avatar came out years before that, and this movie looks like this.
No shit.
It really missed the mark. If you're gonna have that much effects, they need to be done well.
Absolutely.
That kind of took me out of it a little bit.
Oh man.
Yeah.
No, I 1000% agree with you. For whatever reason, it made me flash to one of the only scenes in the second movie that I really give a lot of props to, in terms of it just being like a very clever scene. I'm kind of kicking myself for not bringing it up earlier, but it just kind of didn't really fall in there. But it was when Bev and Ben had to find each other in both the bathroom stall and the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And that scene where, like, she breaks open the bathroom door and it goes into the hole that he's being buried in and she has to drag him out. That was cool. That was fucking clever.
Yeah.
That was cool. But I do agree with you that I felt like this movie, the second movie, especially in terms of quality, even the banter between the kids felt way more forced than it did in the first movie.
Absolutely.
And it really took me out of it a lot of the time.
That's another thing that deducts from the quality, was the way that they shot these was just dumb.
I don't get it. How could you not have known that you were going to film both of these movies?
Yeah.
And why did... I feel like they waited way too long. Yeah. I think they did wait, like, because they didn't cast everybody else initially. Like the adults. They didn't cast the adults initially. So they waited well over a year to film it.
And that's when these kids are going through adolescence, where you change so much in a year.
And you can tell because they had to de-age them in several scenes.
Yeah, they had to de-age them and they had to up the pitch on their voices, which made it not match.
And it just was super,
it was just not good.
It was just unfortunate because truly, like, I don't know how the miniseries was filmed, right? Like in terms of like timing and all of that stuff. I don't know how that was filmed. And I haven't seen that nearly as much. But you would think that, like, Warner Bros. Knew that this was going to be a big enough film. That's why they didn't give it to the Duffer Brothers. They were like, we need this to be successful. You should have known you were going to film it in 2 parts. So it really, it just doesn't make sense. And especially in, like, the time period that it was in. Yeah. It almost seems kind of unacceptable. It does. Like, how could you have planned this any worse?
Yeah. And if you're going to chop it up to where, for some reason, you're throwing in things that should have been in the first movie in the second one, because those flashbacks line up in the beginning or the middle of the first movie.
Yeah.
And you're going to add those into the second one. Yeah. Why the fuck didn't you just record those when you recorded the first one? And even if you were going to wait to record the second one, you could have at least already had that done.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. It was just unfortunate.
It was.
That definitely brings the quality down.
It does. It does. For scariness, there was actually, I can't remember what scene it was, but there was one scare in number 2 that actually kind of got me for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give that like a 2 out of 5. Otherwise, the CGI really took me out of it.
Yeah.
Rewatchability for that one, I'm going to say like a 1. I don't really care to ever watch
the second part
again.
Yeah.
But I like the first one. So I'm going to rewatch the first one. I am also going to just throw it in here really quick. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a quick rating for the book, because for quality for the book, 5 out of 5.
Easy.
For scariness in the book, I'd give it like a 3.5 or a 4. Like, there are some really unsettling parts, and the imagery is done very well. Yeah. Very, very well. So yeah, like a 3.5 or a 4. For rereadability, I'm actually very highly considering making this one of my yearly rereads along with The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 5 out of 5 for reread. Literally the only negative about this book is that it's long.
Yeah, that it just, it's a monster of a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if I were to give the book a rating, quality would be 5 out of 5. I would give it more of a 4 out of 5 for scariness because of not only just the existential scariness of it, there are just also so many scenes in that book that enact such dread. Like, we didn't really talk too much about the book necessarily, but like one of the scariest scenes in the book for me happens as like an after effect. And mm-hmm. it's when like a little 3-year-old disappears off of his tricycle, and later the mom finds him in the toilet, and it looks like he had been like his neck was snapped from the force that was used to pull him into the toilet. And she could hear laughter.
You're actually very right. There are a few of those scenes that I wasn't thinking of.
Yeah.
It's easily a 4 out of 5.
Like viscerally scary, right? Yeah. Like, in, you know, just a lot of like the kind of blatant racism, but then also like when fucking Ben gets the H from Henry, like that whole scene is one of the scariest for me too, because of how realistic it is and also how much further it goes in the book than where it goes in the movie.
Yeah, it's either a 4 or a 4 out of 5 or a 4.5 actually, because the refrigerator.
Yeah. So, and then for rereadability, I mean, I've read it probably like 4 or 5 times now. So I'd probably give it like a 5 out of 5 for rereadability. It's my favorite book. So I'm biased. In terms of like chapter 1 and chapter 2 for the films, for my slingshots with my silver dollars, for chapter 1, for quality, I'd give it a 5 out of 5. And I'm probably going to give it a 5 out of 5 because I got really, nobody wanted to go with me to the theater, so I got really high. Okay, I should preface this. I got Taco Bell and I got some joints, and I went to the movie theater and I ate the Taco Bell and I smoked the joints in the parking lot, and then I went to the movie theater by myself.
Hell yeah.
So it was like one of the best movies I had ever fucking seen. I had so much fun. I laughed and cried and like had just like the best time. So I loved every second of it. I loved the first film. For scariness, I give it more of like a 3 out of 5 slingshots, because it has a lot of really good, like tense, scary scenes in it. But there is also a lot of like release of tension too.
Yeah.
And a lot of like moments where I seriously laughed out loud just from how funny they were. It was mostly Richie and Eddie talking.
Absolutely.
all of their like great one-liners. And then for rewatchability, I give it a 4 out of 5, because for the first movie, I really like watching it. I love even just like listening to it in the background, even if I'm not really fully paying attention to it, because it is super entertaining.
Yeah. I could even just throwing Richie and Eddie on in the background, I would be entertained.
Just listen to that.
Yeah.
Right? For the second one, for quality, I'd give it more like a 3 out of 5. And I'm just thinking about 3 out of 5 for like those scenes like with Ben and Bev. And then like some of like the extra scenes that they put in there. I'm trying to think of like some of the stuff we put, like that Richie with the deadlights thing was just really fucking funny. I appreciated some of the extra scenes that they put in there too, besides like the main cast, like with like Dean in the funhouse.
Yeah.
I appreciated that scene too, because it kind of further led into this theme of Bill feeling guilty over Georgie's death and kind of further leaning into that, while also just giving Pennywise another victim, like another body to add to the body count.
It does also have the Pomeranian. So
yeah, it does
that
have
brings it up a little bit.
Yes. For scariness, I give it a 2 out of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gave it a 2 out of 5. It's not scary. And I feel like even more so it tried too hard to be comedic.
Yeah.
Like I felt like the first movie kind of did some of that too, but it was mostly wit because it was just like these kids.
Yeah.
Right? That were like having banter. When they were adults, I just didn't feel like it hit the same way. And yeah. Even more so, like when they had flashbacks to the children, like in the clubhouse or whatever, their chemistry didn't work the same way that it did when they did the first movie. And I don't know what changed.
Yeah.
I don't know what changed, but it made those scenes weird, disjointed.
And yeah. Yeah. It just didn't land the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Nick was determined to watch these with me.
Yeah.
And he doesn't always watch. But he really wanted to sit with me through these ones. So we watched them back to back. And at the end of part two, he was like, chapter two wasn't bad. It was just really cheesy.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's pretty accurate.
They just tried. Yeah. I don't know why they did that.
No.
They should have leaned more into being serious. Like you can still have releases of tension, but it shouldn't be that often.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I even felt like even Pennywise was being a little silly.
Yeah.
A little too silly at times. And finally, for rewatchability, I mean, if I'm being totally honest with you, I've only seen the second one maybe twice. And this last time I rented it and I didn't even finish it. Like, I know what happens in it. That's why I probably didn't bring up the Ben Bev scene, because I didn't actually get to that part.
Yeah.
But I was pretty thoroughly enjoying it when I was watching it. I knew kind of how disappointing it was in comparison to the first one.
Yeah.
And I had watched a lot of breakdowns about it too. So
it is fun because today we released The Shining.
Yes.
And we're recording it. So we're releasing my favorite book and recording for your favorite book.
Mm-hmm.
And it is fun how when we recorded The Shining, we were reflecting on how like the movie just, it was great. It just didn't hit the way that it should have, or it didn't hit in the way that I feel like the would have really done the book justice.
Yes.
And that's kind of exactly what we're seeing here too, where it's like the movie was fine, but it didn't hit the way that it should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The movies, they were great, right? They had a lot of stuff that made them unique and made them stand out, paid a lot of tribute to the book and like, but also made it their own. But it is really, it's hard to tell that story. Just like it's hard to tell The Shining in that kind of a visual medium.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just because it's way too big of a story to try and tell. Because nobody wants to sit down and just like digest that.
Yeah.
For hours and hours on end. I mean, in like the binge culture that we live in now, maybe they do, but it's not good for you.
And now that the show that is supposed to be the history of Derry is announced,
maybe
we will get to sit there and actually experience what we wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I think it's called Welcome to Derry.
Something
and
like
it's supposed
that.
To be, I'm pretty sure 2025 is the year it's supposed to be released.
Sick.
So we'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. I'm not a like sit and watch a show kind of person.
Right.
I don't watch much TV at all, but I will watch that.
Oh, I'll definitely be watching. I watch too much TV for being honest. So the last part of our podcast, brother, is what are you doing?
Yeah.
What doing?
For the last week, life's been weird. and not in the like depressing, bogged down sort of way that I feel like it has been since the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
It's just I've been reading a lot.
Hey, and I love
that's
that.
That's been great.
That's awesome.
I've been reading a lot. I've just kind of been in my own world a little bit and it feels nice to escape.
Did you play Baldur's Gate on Saturday?
Yes,
nice.
I played Baldur's Gate on Saturday. Last weekend was really chill, mostly just because the weekend prior, Harrison and I had gone on our trip.
Right.
And this coming weekend is my birthday, so I knew we were going to be busy. And so last weekend was just kind of a chill sort of thing.
Yep.
But I did finish 3 books last week, and or actually 4 because one of them's not on here. But one of them was a Stephen King book, so I feel like I want to bring it up really quick.
Yes.
It was 1922,
ooh,
which I've heard there's a movie.
There is.
I haven't watched
it. I've seen it. It's got Thomas Jane in it.
From what I hear, it's actually a pretty good movie.
It's fantastic.
The book was killer. It was really good. And it's short.
Were there rats in it?
Oh, yes. it's a really short book, but it was...
Yeah, it's like a novella, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice.
It was so okay, fucking good.
I bet you I could get through a novella.
Yeah, though, and yes, there are rats. There are
I was just making a joke because, like, I've seen the movie and, like, there are a lot of rats.
Oh, yeah.
It's good, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a telltale heart situation, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
It is.
Yeah.
Actually, and I'll bring this up really quick. Nick gave me my present early. He gave it to me yesterday because we were getting in his car and it was in there. And he was like, yeah, I might as well just give it to you now. He and I are both terrible with surprises. And so he got me probably one of the most suited gifts I feel like I've ever gotten.
Uh-huh.
In this bag, I pull out this ceramic thing,
okay.
And it is a ceramic book-shaped vase that is The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. It's so cool. And then inside it, there was a bunch of little bookmark tabs that have mushrooms on them, and then there was another bookmark that said The Raven, and so there was that. And then he got me a reading journal, and it was so appropriate because he didn't know this, mm-hmm. but when I was thinking about what I want to be doing with my next trip around the sun, there's kind of two things that were really coming up in the forefront of my mind. Mm-hmm. And the first one was that I want to read all of my favorite people's favorite books.
Right.
Like over this next year, I really want to make sure that, like, I read the things that people feel like had an impact on them.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like it's going to help me connect even mm-hmm. a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And
it fuels your passion for reading already.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the second thing that I was thinking was that I already read a lot, but I want to learn how to digest things more comprehensively mm-hmm. and read between the lines a little bit more. And so I want to get into literary analysis, and having a journal where I can actually sit and reflect on what I'm reading is going to make that so much easier. So he had no idea that I was even thinking of that and picked the perfect gift. So I want to shout that out really quick that he did a damn good job.
He's so amazing.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
What was I doing last week? I feel like I was doing, I've just been doing a lot of rock climbing.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, like what I've been doing is, like, anytime I have a long lunch break, I go over to PRG over in Beaverton and just get a couple of auto belay routes in and then come back. And sometimes I come back and I work, or I just go home after that. Mm-hmm. And then I went with a couple of friends one day. And then, like I said, I went, like, on another lunch break. I went yesterday, actually. My roommate really wanted to take a belay test so they could start belaying in the gym. And at the Portland gym, they recommend that you take, like, a seminar. I remember teaching the seminar in college, and they want you to pay for it. It's like $85 or something like that. And so I told them, I was like, I could probably just teach you how to do that. I mean, Owen's come climbing with us enough that they know how to tie themselves into the rope. So it's really just teaching them how to use the belay device and pass the test. So over, like, maybe 2 hours, maybe 3 hours, I showed them how to use that belay device and then tested them on it, because I know how to test for it too, to see, like, if you're doing it correctly and setting it up correctly and what the instructors are going to look for. And then we went at like 9 o'clock in the morning, which is a great time to go rock climbing. Holy shit. I thought to myself while I was sitting on the ground, like, warming up, I was like, man, I should just start scheduling this, like, in my day where I'm like, all right, first thing in the morning, I get up, I go rock climbing.
Yeah. When I was going to PRG for lifting mm-hmm. and bouldering, nobody was ever there between like 9 and 11.
And it just feels good. Like, you just feel like, oh my God, I'm doing something cool for the start of my day.
Yeah.
So they passed their belay test, which is awesome.
Hell yeah.
And then we got some rock climbing in after that. I've been working on 11s on top rope, which hurt the hell out of, like, these two knuckles in my fingers and my hands. But I've been having a lot of fun climbing them. And then I ended up going and getting 3 tattoos yesterday after I was done. So,
on the same line as rock climbing.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to me, Pavel. I know you're listening. I am in the group chat now. We are this much closer to being real life friends. This is going to happen.
It's coming one of these days. We'll have to get you during one of the days that we go to like Beaverton or Portland. I don't actually know which one's closer to you. I'm sure Beaverton is if you're like already at work. Just come hang out.
Yeah.
It'll be great. Yeah, we definitely need to schedule some more time. Other than that, I've just been working. I get home, especially on rock climbing days. Like, I'm so tired, I can't even play video games. Like, I'll maybe play a little bit of Spiritfarer, but, like, I mostly just get home and veg out for a little bit and then go to sleep. Yeah. Which is totally fine with me.
Yeah, it's nice to feel like you're going home and you're tired and you want to hit the hay because you've had a fulfilling day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because you're like, all right, well, I went through the motions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, definitely become a lot more grateful for that. I've definitely over the last couple of months too, like I used to have a joke that my days off were Wednesdays. So I just have a half day those days. Like I have like just a couple of grooms or just one groom or a couple of nail trims. And next week is an exception. But I have had quite a few Wednesdays over the last couple of months where it's like, I don't have anything to do. I try and pack shit. Like I try and stack stuff into those days, mostly rock climbing and like trail restoration and whatnot. But like, for the most part, I don't have anything scheduled that day to really do.
Good.
Because it's just something that I want to do that day.
Good. You deserve that.
Yeah.
You own a business and you work your ass off. You deserve to have some time that's actually what you want to do.
Yeah, every once in a while. It would be nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's it. And happy early birthday.
Thanks. I am of the sand and stone.
Yeah,
I am.
You're finally.
Ancient. I am decrepit.
You're over the side of the hill now.
Yeah. Yep. I am officially like in the 30s. I am doing the damn thing.
You're in the old person era.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do your knees creak just a little bit when you get up now?
Yeah. I feel like I hear a lot of noises from a lot of places that I didn't hear a lot of noises from before.
Well,
so.
You shouldn't say that. You still got two more days of being 31. You should enjoy it.
That's true. Yeah. It's, you know, as soon as I hit 12:05 p.m. on Saturday, I'm gonna have joint pain all over the place.
All right, everybody, have a good night.
Goodbye.
Boy. Hey everybody, it's Karina. I'd like to tell you of a couple of announcements. We have got a Patreon now. You can subscribe at patreon.com/ It's Always Spooky. For $5 a month, we will be having some very special features, so stay tuned for those. Starting with every week, we'll be posting what episode we're planning on doing. So please make sure that you post your scariest and your favorite scenes so that we can feature them in the episode. If Patreon isn't your speed, you can also send us a tip on our Ko-fi account. That's ko-fi.com/ It's Always Spooky. Please, please, please also email us your spooky stories and any recommendations to itsalwaysspookypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much. It's Always Spooky.